This is Fresh Air. I'm Marty Moscoane, in for Terry Gross. The Dinner Game is the latest film from French director Francis Weber. Weber is a prolific creator of comedies and has worked on both sides of the Atlantic. Several of his films have been the basis of Hollywood remakes, including La Cage aux Folles, which was adapted into The Birdcage. He also collaborated on The Tall Blonde Man with One Black Shoe. In America, he directed the film Three Fugitives, which is a Hollywood remake of his French film Les Fugitives. The Dinner Game was a play before Weber turned it into a film. It's about a nasty contest between wealthy French businessmen who compete with each other about who can find the biggest jerk to invite to dinner. And the man who does wins. We invited Weber to tell us about it. He spoke with Terry Gross.
Francis Weber, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you.
Describe the idiot dinner that your movie is based on.
Well, it's a real game that was performed in Paris and is maybe still performed, you know. It is rich, sophisticated people who are setting up dinners where everyone has to bring the biggest jerk they knew, you know. And obviously the jerks didn't know they were participating to that game. And they had to talk, you know, during the dinner, and at the end they had an award in their back, obviously, you know. They didn't know that either. And it was a very cruel game. And it's why I decided to write and direct this movie to punish one of those guys who was setting up those dinners, you know.
Now, do you have any friends who ever participated in this game, either as one of the condescending people or as one of the idiots?
I know some of them as condescending people, you know. I didn't meet the idiots, really, but I know some of them, yeah, sure. You know, they were meeting in a club, a very exclusive club in Paris called Castel. And those guys were publicists, you know, or sometimes working in movie business, you know, or they were, you know, in this area in the industry. So they were not very sympathetic, you know.
Now, most of your films have been remade in America. Are there plans for remaking The Dinner Game?
Well, Steven Spielberg likes the idea, and DreamWorks has bought the rights to the French company, you know, Gaumont, who produced the film. So it could be a remake, you know, but it depends on the adaptation and all the work, you know, to make a film, you see.
I think the premise of American remakes is that only a certain small segment of the population will see a movie with subtitles. Therefore, if you want a lot of Americans to see a movie, you've got to remake it in English with American actors. Do you agree with that premise?
Yeah, sure. It's the main problem, you know, because a movie has to be seen. And obviously, America is a huge country for a movie, you know, but we can't get in it because of the subtitles. Americans don't like dubbed versions or subtitled versions, you know. So there is there a handicap we can't pass over, you know. So we have to remake, we have to accept the remake, you know, to have our film seen here in America.
Now, most of your films have had American remakes, but with the exception of The Birdcage, a remake of your La Cage aux Folles, I think most of the American remakes have flopped, including, you know, The Toy, Three Fugitives, Buddy Buddy, The Man with One Red Shoe.
Three Fugitives was a hit, you know.
Was it a hit?
Yes, it is.
Good.
It was. I directed it myself, and I remember the budget was $16 million, and we did more than $40 million gross, you see. So it was considered by Disney Studio like a very fair hit. It was good.
So the remake, the American adaptation that you made did better than the others. What goes wrong in some of the American remakes?
Well, there are possible explanations, you know. When a producer buys a film, let's say an Italian or a French film, he buys it because he likes it, and then he sees it 10 times, 20 times with the writers that are involved in the adaptation, you know, and the jokes and all that stuff start to be less fresh for him. And let's say that the American writer brings fresher jokes, and trouble starts because they don't know exactly why they bought the original, you know, and they start mixing up things that sometimes don't go well together. It's exactly as if you were putting on some goose liver, you know, some chantilly cream, you see. It's very rich, but it's not very good. So one of the good adaptations I have seen is Birdcage, and I met Ellen May, the writer, in New York, and she's a smart, talented woman, you know, and she said, I tried to stay as close as possible to the French film, you see. So she didn't try to bring too much in the movie. And for reasons like could be wanting credits, you know, or I don't know what, you see. Very often, you know, the original start to be so much transformed that it's no more what the producer loved when he bought the film.
Have you ever gone to a director or screenwriter who adapted one of your movies and said, I don't get it, why did you make this decision?
Yeah, sure. And the ultimate argument is because it's American, and I can't argue at that time.
That's right.
You see, I'll give you an example. The difference between French and American, the most obvious one, is that the capital scene here for a man is to be a wimp, you know. I learned that word, and men are not allowed to be wimps.
You're talking about in the United States?
In the United States, yes. Mm-hmm. In France, you are allowed to be a wimp. You're allowed to be what we call an anti-hero. It means that a man is allowed to cry, to be weak, you know. Here, if the guy does that, he has to have an arc, as they say in the studios, you know, and become Rambo at the end, you see. But an actor like Marcello Mastroianni would have never existed in America because he was just a weak man in his films. He could have cried in front of a woman, you know. He was a wimp very often, and this is not allowed here, you know.
So did that mean that you had one of your movies changed because one of the characters was considered too wimpy?
Sure, sure.
What's an example?
Very, very often. Well, for instance, you know, I had a film called Partners. I was only the screenwriter of this film. And there was a moment where this guy who was very much in love committed suicide. Well, obviously he didn't die. But first the producer told me, oh, no, he can't do that. I said, why? Because he's a wimp. I said, he's a wimp, but he's very sad. He's in love, you know. Yes, but he can't do that. And then, you know, the secretary was typing the script, said, oh, no, he can't do that. I understood that I was really in trouble, you know.
So
and I was obliged to cut that out. Finished.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Now, it strikes me that comedy is probably, I think, the most difficult thing to translate from one language to another because, you know, wordplay isn't going to work the same way in the translation. And also, like, if say, English is your second language and you don't think in English as much as have to translate your thought into English, it's hard to write comedy unless you're thinking in that language. So is it hard for you when you're working on a film in America to do an English comedy?
Well, I prefer in a comedy is what we call situations, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And situations are universal. For instance, the idiot game, you know, the dinner game, is universal because I heard that you have here in fraternities, you know, a very cruel game where boys are inviting the ugliest girl. You know, it's called, I think, dog fights or
That's
something
right.
like that, you
mm-hmm.
see. So this cruelty exists everywhere in the world. It is for idiots in France and for ugly girls in America. So situations can be universal, you know, and it's the way you treat them that is interesting.
How did La Cage aux Folles end up getting adapted into The Birdcage? Were you in on that at all?
No, not at all, no, because The Birdcage was first a stage play in Paris, you know. And I wrote the adaptation with the original writer, the stage writer. And by the way, it was very funny because we rented an apartment, you know, because I had my two kids that were young and very noisy, so I couldn't work in my house. So we rented a little apartment in a modern building, you know. And I was writing, and the guy was an actor, the stage writer, was performing. And people around, you know, because the walls were very thin, were hearing things like, woo, woo, moose, whoops. And they said, oh, when we're getting out, say, this is the gay guys of the third floor, you know.
I wonder what you thought of the American musical with the score by Jerry Herman. I assume you've seen it.
Yes, I liked it.
Mm-hmm. What did you think of a song like I Am What I Am, which is, you know, kind of like an anthem of self-esteem, which seems much more serious in tone than La Cage aux Folles was.
I think it is the difference between American and French, you know. The French were very light on the subject, you know. And it's why it was not offending at all for anybody, you see, because I remember the critics, the reviews were like a spicy French pastry, you know, talking about Birdcage. So American want to be sometimes more, you say, significant, you know, more serious, you know. And it's that the song you're talking about is a sign of that.
That's French director Francis Weber talking with Terry Gross. His new film is The Dinner Game. More after a short break. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to Terry's interview with French director Francis Weber.
What do you think the state of the French film industry is now? And what I'm thinking is, you know, in the 60s, the French film industry was famous for breaking rules and trying new things, the French New Wave, Truffaut, Godard, Louis Malle. And then afterwards, French movies became better known for their light comedies or historical dramas, and both a real switch from that sense of experimentation of the French New Wave.
I think that the French New Wave had children that are very boring. I'm not afraid by historical films or comedies. I'm afraid by those intellectual movies that are so slow-paced, you know, and so self-indulgent that are getting in the festivals, you know, and you have people thinking that because it's boring, it's interesting, you know. And I think that we are committing suicide sending those films around the world. People need to have fun a little bit, you see. A friend of mine said something very funny, you know. He said those French comedies that are so boring are in fact made by American studios who want to destroy the French cinema, you know.
What are some of the films that you consider the offspring of the French New Wave that you find pretentious and dull?
I can't make so many enemies in one shot.
Right, you know? I don't blame you.
What I can tell you is that the two-thirds of the film that are sent in festivals and things like that and made by French people are nightmares for an ordinary viewer, you know. It's nightmarish because it's so boring. You know, we have a system in France to produce a movie that is very dangerous because people are assisted, you know. It means that they have money from the government, you know, they have money from everywhere. And the result of the movie is not that important. In America, if you don't make money with the film, well, it's a disaster. In France, no. No. So you have people that are not writing for the audience. They are writing to please themselves or to please the reviewers, you know. And this is the reason why, very often, we can't compete with your movies who are going all around the world because they are just bringing entertainment to people, you know. So what I'm saying is not that you should refuse every intellectual movie. Some of them are wonderful, you know. But when they are bad, it's 2 hours of your time that are really killed, you know.
I appreciate what you're saying about the offspring of the French New Wave, but did the French New Wave have an impact on you when you were watching those films for the first time?
Yes, the way of acting was very interesting because we were coming out, people were stage actors, you know, and were not at all that natural, you know, the way Godard and Malle and Truffaut directed the actors was very new. What I'm more skeptical about is the story they were telling, you know. Because I love Malle. Louis Malle did very interesting stories, you know. I like Truffaut. But the other guys, you know, are sometimes more suspicious to me, you see, because their stories were not that interesting.
What were some of the American films that helped shape your sensibility when you were coming of age?
I told you the great American comedies, you know. I rave about them, you know. I think it's so good to see what Preston Sturges did, you know, the way those writers were writing. And someone gave me an explanation to this quality, you know. He said that those writers in the old times were coming from Broadway. They were stage writers first. Now the writers are TV writers. And it's very different, you know, because TV writers know how to write a punchline. And stage writers at that time were knowing how to build, to structure a situation, you know. And this is amazing. I remember scenes, you know, for instance, in Some Like It Hot, when Tony Curtis is with Marilyn Monroe, he wants to make love to her, but he doesn't know how to do it because he knows that she will refuse, turn him out. So he says to her that he is impotent, if you remember well.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly, she's no more a woman, she is a doctor. And she's so touched by the problem of this guy that she will end up sleeping with him. This is a great screenwriting, you know, because the scene is sincere. It looks sincere, and it is so funny, you see? And I have the feeling that this craftsmanship has a bit disappeared everywhere in the world because it was a lot of work, you know. I know that Diamond Wilder, Diamond was his writer, you know, were spending hours, you know, to try to find that kind of scenes.
There was a period in French cinema when it seemed as if the government had passed a rule saying that every movie had to star Gérard Depardieu. Now, maybe it was just the films that were coming to America. I know you've worked with him. What happened during that period when he seemed to be in everything?
First, he wanted to perform in everything, you know, because I don't know if he did that to stop the other guys, you know, in their race, you know, and to try to have the best parts. But he was so voracious about shooting, you know. He was making something like 5 or 6 films a year. And I think, you know, Depardieu is a very strange and interesting man because he looks like a big, big, strong man like that. But he's so fragile, you know. And when he was not on a set, he was in jeopardy, you know, in his real life. So I think he was taking refuge on sets too, you know. He was going on films to protect himself against himself, you see.
What's it like to work with someone who's so different off-screen than they are on-screen?
It's very interesting with Depardieu. You know, he's a very subtle, fragile, interesting man, you know. He was on therapy during 2-3 years when you see this guy with his huge hands, you know, this strong man like that. You think that he's just a bull, you know. He's not. He's a very, very, very interesting man.
Now, my understanding is that there's a lot of people in France who are disturbed at the amount of American cultural imports coming into the country. Are filmmakers in France feeling very competitive with American films and like American films threaten to drive out French films, even in France?
I think that there's a huge, huge stream, wave of American films that are very good first, you know, very expensive, and that talk to any mentality, any nationality, you know. It means that those action movies, you know, we can't compete with them. It means that if I have the unluck, you know, to open a movie in front of Star Wars in October, I mean The Phantom Menace in October, I am dead. I'm dead meat because you can't compete, you know. And those monsters are arriving, you know, and all over the world, you know, they are scratching the local movies. And sometimes one of them can fight a little bit against those big machines, you know, but it's very difficult because it's a pure science the way the studios here are building those projects, you know. I mean, when they are putting more than $100 million in a movie, you know, and you see that the budget in France is something like $6 million, $7 million, you see. When they are the advertisement for it is so expensive too, you know, that you have the feeling of a tank arriving in your country, you know, and you are on a bicycle to fight it, you
right,
see.
Right.
So sometimes a little comedy like mine, because mine was second after Titanic, you know.
At
the box office, you know. A little comedy like mine can resist, you know, but it's a miracle.
When you see an American film in France, would you prefer to see it dubbed or subtitled?
I know I prefer to see it in the original, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Is that the common feeling?
No. I have a house in the south of France, and there is there what we call a multiplex, you know. It's many theaters. There is no one giving the movie in English. All the movies, the American movies, are in French. And I heard a guy, an old guy, telling me once, I didn't know that Harrison Ford was speaking so well French, you know, because he thought that it was...
you really lose so much when you don't get the grain of the actor's voice.
Yes, I agree with you. I agree with you. It's not normal. You have to hear their voices. You know, my dream is that one day American will understand that there are good films around the world that are made and that the effort of reading subtitles is worth it, you know. It happened a little bit with Benigni's film Life is Beautiful because of the story matter, you know, but my dream is that all those great films that are done in Russia, in France, in Italy, in Spain will arrive here and seen by people who will be the average audience, you know, not only the audience of the art houses. But this is a dream.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you very much.
That's French director Francis Weber talking with Terry Gross. His new film is The Dinner Game. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, and this is Fresh Air.